Russell Wilson and the Seahawks were hosting the Bucs yesterday. Russ showed why he's one of the best in the game. 378 yards, 5 touchdowns. Seahawks needed every yard, though. They hold on to just barely beat the Bucs in overtime, 40-34. Nick, did Russ make an MVP statement?
Kenny, I'm with you on this. He's been making it all year.
Yep.
There was, through a couple weeks of the season, Patrick Mahomes looked like he was going to repeat his league MVP. Then all of a sudden, he had a couple statistically mediocre games, and he got hurt. And Aaron Rodgers had, a few weeks ago, I think 8 touchdowns in 2 games. And Deshaun Watson, as of late, has surged. And Lamar, certainly as of last night, has gotten himself in the conversation. But there's one guy from week 1, we just finished week 9, has been right there the whole time. And it's Russell Wilson. He's been spectacular. He's made one big mistake all season long. It was the pick 6 to Marcus Peters. Marcus Peters against Baltimore. He's doing it with a motley crew of receivers. He had turned Will Disley, a tight end, into a real weapon. Will Disley pops his Achilles, no problem. You got DK Metcalf, who can't change direction, no problem. I'll throw it to him in the right direction. And when you watch Russ play, Kenny, it seems like the catches seem impressive by the receivers because it's in close windows, but every time it seems like it's hitting the receiver in the perfect position every time. He's playing, this is a first ballot Hall of Famer, playing the best football of his career. So yeah, he has kept himself atop the MVP power rankings, if you will.
Yeah, he's earning every penny of that $35 million a year extension that they gave him this offseason. But, I mean, they gave him that for a reason, because you always use the term force multiplier. That's exactly what Russell Wilson is. If you talk to receivers that play with really good quarterbacks, they talk about how when the quarterback throws the ball, right before it gets to him, the ball slows down a little bit. That's exactly what seems like happens with Russell Wilson and the passes that he makes to his receivers. And he's got a special type of chemistry with Tyler Lockett. You see, in gotta have it type situations, he's always looking for Lockett. He's kind of replaced Doug Baldwin in that regard. But in terms of judging quarterbacks and judging who the most valuable player is, all you have to look at it is this: the competitive greatness of the individual player, being at your best when your best was required. Yesterday in overtime, Russell Wilson, 5 of 8, 70 yards and a touchdown. But even before that, setting up an opportunity for Jason Myers to have a 40-yard field goal, which he missed. But then the team not flinching because they know they have number 3 under center. That speaks to the importance of what Russell Wilson brings to that team. It's a confidence factor that Seattle Seahawks team is playing with right now. And listen, they didn't return the favor for the LA Rams. Rams lost at home to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. That was a situation based on the deficit that the Seahawks had in that first half, being down 21-7. They could have easily lost that game, but they found a way to hang in there. And then Russell made the requisite plays at the end.
I didn't, as we've joked about on the show, I did not have a good day gambling yesterday. One of the few wins I had was Russell Wilson, Seattle Seahawks. And I got to tell you, even down 21-7, I was never concerned. As long as the Seahawks were going to get the ball, I felt great about it. They were down 21-7. The Seahawks even playing terribly. And what does Russ do? Leads back-to-back touchdown drives and the two-point conversion. Tied 27 apiece. A 3-play, 75-yard drive with the huge play to DK Metcalf. You mentioned, after the Seahawks give up another touchdown, I was worried Tampa might go for 2 in that spot because they couldn't stop Seattle. They kicked the extra point. Russell, in less than a minute, gets him in chip shot field goal range. Missed. So win the coin toss, drive him right down the field. He is just in total control at all times. This is that next level of play that I think guys can only get to when they have the talent, the confidence, and the experience, where it does appear that for Russell, everything is slowing down. And I don't think DK Metcalf's a superstar. Maybe he will be one day, but not as a rookie. I don't think Tyler Lockett's a superstar, but his production has been superstar level because Russ puts them in the best position every single week. He was sensational.
After Friday night's game, LeBron hopped on the gram, posted this: "My drive and passion will outweigh your hate. Nothing you can do to stop me. You only help me. Hashtag revenge season. Hashtag the kid from Akron." He's big mad, Nick. Big mad. Yeah. What? Nick, can re-energize LeBron lead the Lakers to an NBA title?
Yeah, he can. Looks like he will. Looks, you know what year 17 LeBron looks like? year 14 LeBron, or year 11 LeBron, or year 7 LeBron, or basically the LeBron James we've gotten every single year after his rookie season.
Yeah.
Rookie season comes in, he's a 21-5-5 guy. And since then, despite oddly never actually having a 27-7-7 game in his whole career, he's given you 27-7-7 year in, year out. This year, he's doing it a little differently. One less point, one more rebound, four more assists, 26-8-11. He's playing out of position, but that out of position is allowing him to lead the NBA in assists by a wide margin. He right now is, if you care about the nerdy defensive stats, he's a top three defensive player in the league so far this year. And it turns out, for the first time in a decade, not having a 100-game season, we saw no teams had gone to four straight finals until recently when the Heat did it, the Cavs did it, the Warriors did it, obviously. The Warriors amazingly went to five straight, and now the entire team is injured. Mm. Everyone that's a part of it
is dealing. There's no one left right now playing.
Because bodies are not built to play five consecutive 100-game seasons. LeBron played eight consecutive. And then his groin gave out on him, and last year was a lost season. And then he got some rest, got some rejuvenation, spent some time, it would appear, on a very nice boat in the south of France. And he came back and reminded everybody, hey, that best player in the world title, it still goes through me. And with him playing like this, Canny, and Anthony Davis being Anthony Davis, and the Lakers actually having a living, breathing NBA head coach, I don't know if Frank Vogel's great, but he sure as hell ain't Luke Walton. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the best team in the NBA right now.
Oh, no doubt about it. And you talked about LeBron James and that injury that he had last year. That was probably the best thing for his career, knowing that he's getting a little bit older. The fact that he was able to get some rest this past offseason, not having an extended playoff run, he can come back this year and be rejuvenated. But I go back to something that Nick noticed at the beginning of last season about LeBron's game. And he said LeBron didn't look as engaged defensively. It looks completely different this season in terms of his engagement on the defensive end. All you got to do is go back to that Mavs game on Friday and look at how he played in the final minutes of that game in the fourth quarter and in overtime. He took over that game, but it was started with his defense. The fact that he set the tone for that team and that they've embraced defense as being the identity for them, I think that's going to bode well for them, because at the end of it, I think it will be the Lakers and the Clippers. We know the Clippers can play lockdown defense, but I think that this LeBron James, if we get this version of him the entire season, especially on the defensive end, I think this Lakers team is right there. And ultimately, when you look at the star power, I trust LeBron James and Anthony Davis a little bit more than I trust Kawhi Leonard and Paul George.
But Nick, this is almost like LeBron, I don't want to say 2.0, it's like 7.0, if you will. He leads the league in assists, so he's obviously just altered his game a little bit. Yep. He's playing defense for the first time in a long time, and he's actually enjoying playing with the people around him. Just talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, I think the defense point, the team right now, they're the number one defense in basketball. They have the number one defensive rating. They're number one in opponent field goal percentage. They're second in opponent threes, and so and that's where Vogel gets credit, because that is what he was known for in Indiana. Didn't work out for him in Orlando, but that's where Vogel gets credit, and it helps when you have Anthony Davis on the inside and LeBron out on the perimeter. But where LeBron made a point after the game, I think it was Friday night, against the Mavs, where he was asked about his defense, and he said, here's what's never happened to me my whole career. No one's ever singled me out defensively, meaning they don't hunt him the way Steph would get hunted. Like, oh, let me get LeBron on a switch. Where his on-ball defense has always been exceptional. Where it lagged last year and where it lagged in the regular season the last few years with the Cavs was his off-ball defense was lackadaisical, was at times he almost seemed like he wasn't paying full attention on the court, which is very not like what we're used to LeBron first decade of his career. This year, I think to set the tone for the team, it has been the opposite. His off-ball defense has been exceptional. He's always making the right switch. He's always getting to the right place. The offense, he will always be an A-plus offensive player, because even right now when his shot's not falling, he's the best passer in basketball, and he's got Anthony Davis as a cheat code to dump the ball down to. So the Lakers right now have a league average offense. That'll get better. If they can be a top five defense, and right now they're the number one defense, they will not only be the best team in basketball, they will clearly be the best team in basketball. Because to your point, that's where the Clippers are supposed to have a huge edge.
Yes.
The Clippers are supposed to have a huge edge defensively, expecting the Lakers would have an edge offensively. Up to this point in the season, that has not been the case.
No, it hasn't been the case. And LeBron James told us coming into this season, a lot of people have been playing with the throne.
Yeah.
Now he's going to be back with a vengeance. Guess what? He's back.
Looking like it. He's still the best player in the league. It's only been 14 straight years.
We've been treated to some star-studded performances by Kyrie Irving. The Nets superstar, 222 points this year.
God.
That is second most in a player's first seven games with a new team in NBA history. Why first most? Will Chamberlain. That's not bad company for Kyrie. Sarah, you're with this team every day. How impressive has Kyrie been this year?
It's been so much fun to watch, and I think it's a certain level of a player that you're accustomed to the numbers they put up. You see the highlights, you're watching the games in and out, but you don't truly appreciate the player that they are. When you look at the numbers, it's not just the points, too, because it's about he's averaging close to 8 assists per game. He's at about 6 rebounds per game.
The rebounds is impressive.
And he has been getting after it. And you say that on the glass, he's been really active. He's been much more active and engaged on defense. And the way in which he's done it throughout the flow of the offense. Mm-hmm. And so I think you look at these numbers and it's like, oh, he must just be putting up a ton of shots and have a sky-high usage rate. It's not been that way. He's been highly efficient from the field. He can hit a three from anywhere. He can get to the basket, I think, more than anything. And we always see it, the highlight reel type handles that he brings to the table. But how he's able to manipulate a defense. It is not translated probably to the extent that they want in wins to this point, but I wouldn't put that on Kyrie. He's also had some timely baskets. So he's really been a tremendous asset to a team that's continuing to still look to build some chemistry.
Well, Kyrie wanted to go somewhere where he would feel the love, and Brooklyn was a team where the players and the organization were actively recruiting him during the season and the offseason. And so you look at this situation, this is everything that Kyrie Irving was looking for. You know, coming off of a year where he got a lot of criticism in Boston. People didn't understand why that team didn't live up to the expectations. That team pushing a LeBron James-led Cavs team the year before with no Kyrie, with no Gordon Hayward to game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals. People couldn't figure out why that Boston Celtics team couldn't take that next step and why it looked like they regressed. And Kyrie bore the brunt of that criticism. But now in Brooklyn, it hasn't been that at all. So I think a lot of it has to do with the expectations coming into this year, because even though Brooklyn had an awesome offseason where they got Kyrie and KD, everybody realized that KD is going to be dealing with the Achilles and that you probably weren't going to see him the upcoming NBA season. But that provided Kyrie with the opportunity to come into this year with relatively low expectations in comparison to the organization that he just left. So he can just go out there and play basketball. And to me, it looks like a more relaxed Kyrie Irving out there. And the one other difference that I would say in the situation this year with Kyrie as opposed to Boston, this is a more veteran team than the group that was up there in Boston. I think that the Nets are secure in their identity and what Kenny Atkinson and Sean Marks have been building for several years now. So I just feel like this is a better situation for Kyrie. A lot less noise. He can go out there and play basketball.
Too many guys in Boston, and I don't begrudge them this, were playing for their second contract. And that's the riskiest thing in the NBA. Terry Rozier had never been paid. Jaylen Brown had never been paid. Al Horford was a pending free agent, even though Al is the consummate pro. Tatum had never been paid. And so all those guys who had thrived when Kyrie was on the shelf, when he was hurt his first year in Boston at the end, it's the chemistry never fit. And Kyrie is a different cat. And I don't say that in a negative way. He just is. Listen, some people would say I'm a different cat. Like, there's not the same way Kyrie is, but there are some things that go along with Kyrie that not everyone is going to thrive with and not everyone wants to sign up for. And I know some people can say, oh, the Nets, they were one of the fun up-and-coming teams. Now they're 3-4 this year. Two things are unfair about that. One is, first week of the season, they had the game in Kyrie's hand to win it twice and just missed. Like, now in the game in the middle of that, he actually had the game in his hand and made. But the first game of the year, he did a little slip and slide maneuver and missed the jump shot. Second game was when Ja Morant blocks him and they end up losing overtime. Mm-hmm. They could easily this year be 5-2 instead of 3-4. But the other thing for the Nets is they have a gaping hole at forward on their roster. Now, you know who's going to step into that hole is Kevin Durant. Yeah. But this is, and I'm not trying to put you in a weird spot, but they built this team believing, well, when KD's here, not only are we not going to have a hole at forward, we might have the best player in the league, some would argue, in that spot. But in the meantime, they've got a bunch of competent NBA centers, maybe a surplus of competent guards, and they're figuring out the front court spots, which in a league where all the best guys are front court players, it feels like, that's a tough spot to be weak. But 31, 32, 6, and 8 is unimpeachable. And he's doing it on high efficiency. So I was a critic of Kyrie last year to a degree because I felt like it wasn't going to work in Boston, and that was proven out to be true. I think it's unfair to criticize him based on the Nets being a game under 500 through 2 weeks this season.
Okay, let me just be a little Debbie Downer here. With those 32 points come the rumors of mood swings, of sometimes he's got some personality issues, sometimes butt heads with management in some way. How does that factor in, and how concerning is that for the
team?
And
I respect these questions, or I respect the things that people talk about from what happened in Boston, what happened in Cleveland. I'm there every day. I'm there at practice. I sit through the open gyms. You're there at games. You talk to the teammates. You know the players, many of them who you've known for many years, and there's been no issues. And that's not to say we've all been through the course of an NBA season, the highs and lows. You're traveling with people, you're around people, things come up and things happen. But to this point, and I know that had stemmed from Jackie McMullen I respect more than anyone on the planet. I don't think that was the purpose of her article. And sometimes we pull one thing out of there, and that's where the mood swings had come up from. I think anytime a guy comes to a new situation and he's still relatively young in his career, 27 year, a fresh slate, and it's a different group. And as Nick said, it's a different set of personalities on this Nets group, which have embraced Kyrie. Kyrie has embraced them. He has got a high level of compete. He is intense, and he brings a whole nother level of a mentality of trying to win a championship to a group. However, I think that's been something that's been a very positive for this team.
And I want to add one other thing. The Nets last year were a really, really successful indie film where they had no stars, where they had everyone that was just trying to prove themselves all it is. They are now a set where Christian Bale or Russell Crowe or Scarlett Johansson walks onto it. And guess what? Those people get a little special treatment. Those people are a little different than the others. And maybe for some people it's jarring because, oh, we had all this great everything going. Yeah, but you had a defined ceiling. There's not a lot of Tim Duncans. There's not a lot of people, continuing the analogy, not a lot of Keanu Reeves. Mm-hmm. A-list superstar with no ego whatsoever. It's like just wants to be one of the guys. So I've been someone that's been critical of Kyrie Irving. You know this is the deal with the most famous people in the world, of which Kyrie is one. I don't think that has to do with the Nets being, to this point in the season, slightly below expectations record-wise.
NFC is stacked. According to our friends at Fox Bet, the Saints are the favorites to win the conference, followed by the 49ers, the Packers, the Cowboys, and the Philadelphia Eagles. All right, Kenny, who is the best team in the NFC?
I'm going with the New Orleans Saints. In order to be a true contender, you got to be able to win football games a lot of different ways. The Saints have shown us they can win by kicking 4 field goals, as they did against the Dallas Cowboys. They also showed us that they can go out there and score 36 points against a top 10 defense in yards and points, that being the Chicago Bears. So I really like what this Saints team has done. And they've had to overcome some adversity early on in the season, losing their quarterback, Drew Brees, for 6 weeks with the thumb injury. So the fact that Teddy Bridgewater stepped in and was able to hold down the fort until Drew Brees got back, I think that forced that Saints team to try to figure out different ways in order to win football games. They accomplished that task. That's only going to make them better as the season goes on.
Listen, the Saints are an extraordinary team. And by the way, on these odds, I don't think Seattle's the best team, but Seattle being 12-1 to win the NFC, Seattle being behind Dallas and Philadelphia, to me is outrageous. Like, once again, Russell Wilson and what he's doing gets underrated somehow. Seattle's, to me, should be a clear number 4, if not number 3, but number 4 probably behind. You mentioned the Saints, the Packers, and the Niners. And I don't want to discount the Niners, top three offense, top three defense, but I'm going to discount the Niners because I don't believe in them and their ability to beat the best teams in football come the postseason. The Saints are great. I think the Packers are better. Now, I get the argument that prove it to me, and it is tough to prove it to you because of the arguments you made, and that we saw the Saints do it with their backup quarterback for, at this point, three quarters of the season. The Packers had the most impressive resume of any team in football until last week, and it felt to me like they exhaled in that Charger game.
And Aaron Rodgers said that, too. We might have gotten a little ahead of ourselves.
Well, and he didn't like the way they got there, the travel out west, and after going to Kansas City, winning that game on national television the way they did, it felt like the Charger game was a bit of a letdown, and I am willing, because of what they, the credibility they earned over the first 2 months, to call that an outlier game, to say, okay, listen, they will throw that game out, even though hurts their ability to get the bye, as you always talk about, hurts their ability to be the one seed. But I feel like the Packers were just finally starting to hit their stride. And that team is the scariest team in the NFL. A team that doesn't have to have its offense be great to beat you, but its offense can be as great as any offense in football. The difference between the Chiefs and Packers, if we think those are the two most talented quarterbacks in the league, in Mahomes and Rodgers, is the Chiefs don't have a hell of a lot of paths to victory against great teams without Patrick Mahomes being the best player in the league.
Agreed.
The Packers have shown you, especially early in the year before Rodgers really got going, that they can beat the Bears, they can beat the Vikings, they can beat really good teams without Aaron Rodgers playing great. And when he does play great, well, then all of a sudden you're up 31-3 on the Dallas Cowboys in a game the Cowboys feel like they've got to have. So I think the Packers are the best team in football, or the best team in the NFC, pardon me. And I'm not going to argue with you too hard, because the Saints to me would be the 1A to the Packers 1, but I think the Packers are the best.
Well, here's the thing. I think the Packers will be the best as this thing goes on, as they get more familiar with what Matt LaFleur wants to do in terms of his overall philosophy and his scheme. But I don't think they're there right now. There's too much inconsistency with the running game, and then their defense hasn't shown the ability to consistently stop the run. And to me, that's where football is won and lost once we get into December and January. The teams that are strong in the trenches, that's why I can't discount the San Francisco 49ers, even though I don't trust their quarterback. Nick, you mentioned top five offense, top five defense. The fact that that offense isn't whole yet, the fact that they're going to get Joe Staley, Mike McGlinchey, and Kyle Juszczyk back at some point, I think that's only going to help Jimmy Garoppolo, who to this point in the season is the only question mark for that 49ers team.
Would either of you be surprised if the Niners were ended up being the best team in the NFC?
Oh, I wouldn't be shocked if they ended with the best record. I'd be very surprised if they ended in the Super Bowl. And Niner fans and Richard Sherman can say, you know, you weren't on the bandwagon, don't jump on it, keep doubting us, no problem. The Niners are better than I thought they would be. I do not believe that team, even when they get those big people back, and it's a great point that they've been doing it without Joe Staley, and Juszczyk's a huge part of what they do. Probably the best fullback in football. We don't usually talk about fullbacks, but he's excellent in his role in that Kyle Shanahan offense. I don't think they're ready to take that leap. I don't think they're ready to go from a team that's been in the dregs for a number of years to representing the NFC in the Super Bowl.
We'll find out on Monday night, because they got the Seattle Seahawks, a team that has beat them 9 out of the last 10 times.
But enough can't be said for what Kyle Shanahan has done with that team.
He's extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.